A month into the summer travel season, how are the airlines doing so far? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Kate Hanai, who started a little organization called the Coalition for the Airline Passengers Bill of Rights. Kate prefers that we now just call it flyersrights.org, because that's where you'll find it on the web. The coalition now has 23,000-plus members, and the whole point is to get some congressional action, or at least DOT action, to put in place a passenger's bill of rights, some minimum standards that can't be violated by the airlines when it comes to your personal health and safety. Kate, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me. I always love doing your show.
One of the things that happened recently within the DOT was that the penalties paid by airlines, or the compensation paid to passengers when you're bumped from a flight, recently substantially went up. What I'm hearing from you now is that many of the calls you're getting on your Flyers' Rights hotline are from people who are being denied compensation through some creative or just devious means.
Yes, that's correct. Here's what the major calls that we're getting are one specific situation, and that has to do with connecting flights, where people have purchased a flight with the same airline to connect and then get to their destination on a second flight with the same airline. And the airline is selling them tickets, telling them that an hour is enough time to make it to the gate, right? In terms of the time in the middle of the connection.
Uh-huh.
Well, but here's the problem. They're also saying that you need to be at the gate an hour early now in order to not be bumped. And if they start, and they're boarding flights early, and they're actually taking off flights early by filling them up with last-minute arrivals who pay four times the money for the tickets.
Ah.
So the calls that we're getting are from people who have connecting flights and saying that they went to the gate, and the gate was moved, and there was no overhead announcement.
Or there was an overhead announcement before they got to the airport.
Correct. So they're not being notified, and they're not being, and yet the airline knows that they're there. They have the records of who was on the incoming flights. They know that these people are expecting to be on a connecting flight, and these people are all arriving at the gates at least 20 minutes before the flight leaves and being told that they are not going, they're finally making it to the correct gate by, you know, figuring out that something's gone wrong.
Uh-huh.
And then they make it there, and they're told, nope, you're too late, you can't board. And then they're also told that since they weren't at the gate early enough, they don't get the denied boarding compensation.
This sounds
deceptive.
It's
a loophole.
I was going to say, they're obviously planning people, setting people up to be bumped in favor of people who will pay that last-minute fare.
That's correct. They are. And in addition to that, I have a deep throat source at Continental Airlines who's very high up in customer service. And she wants desperately to get out of there. And she's started her own website called worstflightever.com. And Continental doesn't know who it is. And I can't say who it is that started it.
They have some clues now, though.
Yeah, but anyway, she told me that they actually will go to the length, like for people who are a lot of people are being bumped, you know, before their flight also, you know, before they even get a chance to take off. If they don't arrive at curbside an hour early for domestic or 3 hours early for international, then they're being bumped and their seats are being sold unless there's no one there that wants to buy that seat. And so a lot of our calls are that. And I asked her the question. I said, well, how do they know where you are? If you check in from home and you have only carry-on bags, how do they know whether or not you're in the airport? And she said, well, they will go to the length of looking at the ISP address of how you checked in. And if you checked in at the airport, they'll know that you're in the airport. If you checked in at home, they'll know that you may not be at the airport. And they'll do everything in their power if you bought your ticket with frequent flyer miles or paid very little for it, or bought it some time ago when the prices were lower, to not have you on that plane.
Well, Kate, there are a lot of things the airlines can get away with. You know, for example, maybe a lot of people don't understand that the so-called contract of carriage isn't really a contract.
It's a unilateral contract. The things they put in there are so vaguely worded, and the words have never been distinguished. We call them wiggle words.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, for instance, with regard to the stranding events, where they say, we can hold you on the ground for a reasonable amount of time in the event of a weather delay.
Right.
They've never determined in a court of law what the word reasonable means. Reasonable could be 3 days.
Yeah.
Truthfully. I mean, that is the truth. And so until that word is distinguished, and then they use words like possible,
to the best of our ability.
We will provide snacks when available.
Right,
well,
right.
People don't know what they can count on, and it's because there's really nothing. And the air, what I mean by unilateral contract is that it's supposed to be a contract between the client of the airline and the airline. But just like when I was in new home sales, what people didn't realize walking in the sales office
mm-hmm.
is that I represented the developer.
Right.
Even though I was drafting their contract for them,
mm-hmm.
it was in the fine print that I represented the developer. And the attorneys that drew up these contracts represent the airlines, and they drew them up in a way that doesn't benefit the consumer in any way. And if you ask the DOT, they'll tell you there's nothing enforceable in the contract of carriage other than the bump or baggage requirements.
All right. Now, you mentioned that the bump requirements are enforceable. What does the DOT say about this, or has it even gotten that far yet?
Well, the DOT says if they don't arrive at the gate within the time frame that the airlines say they have to, that there's no case. There's no cause of action.
All right, let's talk about what we could do to avoid being in this situation. I would assume then if we're sitting down doing an itinerary, we want to make sure that we have more than enough time, way more than enough time at a late... And this is frustrating. We actually have to plan now for maybe a two-hour layover instead of...
I'd say three.
Yeah.
I would put 3 hours in between because so many flights are actually circling in the air due to congestion issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, not being able to land immediately.
Right.
Or sitting on the tarmac waiting for a gate, that by the time you do get in the airport, there may be somewhat of a delay anyway, and then you're scrambling to figure out which gate, and often the airlines are changing gates, and if you're in an airport like Dallas-Fort Worth or Miami, where there are huge airports with long distances to go between some of the gates, you will not make it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're, and I would, you know, and this is going to benefit the airports hugely from a financial standpoint.
Right.
I would plan to spend my day at the airport, really. Unless I have a flight that's the very first flight in the morning that's going out, and I have a guaranteed seat on that flight, and I can get there 2 hours beforehand, I would go and spend 3 or 4 hours beforehand at the airport to make sure that I am at the gate at least that hour early for domestic and 3 hours early for
international,
to make sure that there's no way that it can be manipulated that I'm not on that flight.
Should we still check in from home?
Yes, we should check in from home, but only if you have an assigned seat. Here's the thing, that a lot of the flights are, if you purchase your ticket at the last minute from home or you purchase with frequent flyer miles, a lot of the time they're not giving you a seat. They're saying, wait till you get to the airport to get your seat.
Right.
You're the first person to be bumped.
Mm-hmm.
Only purchase seats that can be assigned, period. And if you can't get an assigned seat, assume that you are not going to get on that aircraft.
Okay.
Just assume it. The capacity is too tight right now.
I guess if we know the rules, at least we can play their game.
That's right. If we know the rules, we can play their game, and the rules keep changing. But the bumping compensation doubled in May on the 18th, and mm-hmm. we're responsible for that. It was our group that had the most responses to the Department of Transportation for that rulemaking, and that rulemaking was in response to our questioning them very hostily about why they hadn't increased the bumping compensation in 25 years. And so they finally increased it, and literally the day that bumping compensation increased, our calls of people not being given the bumping compensation and not making their connecting flights increased.
Well, Kate, when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about your progress in Congress, because I know there have been some bright spots and also some frustrations lately. My guest is Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to the special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org. We like to check in with Kate at least once a month or so because she's on top of what's happening from the consumer side in the airline industry, and frankly, some of it's not very exciting this time of year. We're a month into the travel season. We talked about bumping. Kate, let's talk about what the summertime means for Congress, and that means kind of like molasses. There's, you know, recesses going on, and it looked like you were going to get some things done before the end of June that didn't quite work out.
Yes. We wanted to get our Bill of Rights passed by the end of June, and we also wanted to have further progress with the Department of Transportation regarding their advance notice of a proposed rulemaking, which could become a rule regarding development of contingency plans for getting people off of planes and taking care of their basic human needs during their air travel experience. And but a new happening that was unexpected, that's very positive, is that Chairman Oberstar and Chairman Costello together proffered a bill that has everything that we wanted in it, plus a few things that we hadn't thought of about not implanting passengers for 60 days after the spraying of pesticides and some other things, and a $25,000 penalty for the airlines violating their plans, which was not in any other regulation that we had before Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a new bill, and it's our understanding that the intention was to get it passed before the end of July, before Congress goes on vacation, that was Congress's intention.
Right.
So we're going to be lobbying this next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, before the next task force meeting, which is Thursday, to push, especially the more conservative members of Congress who might vote no, to understanding how valuable this legislation is and how necessary it is now. Actually, we're behind so far in keeping up with the number of things that we feel are deceptive practices now. Just to get this legislation passed is only the beginning of mm-hmm. what we're going to need to do based on the conversation that we're having about bumping. All of these, what we would call deceptive practices, actually need to be made deceptive practices. If they're going to overschedule flights by up to 56% in a time slot, that should be a deceptive practice
mm-hmm.
because that's keeping people on the tarmac.
If I recall correctly, just to give our listeners a little background, when FAA reauthorization legislation was working its way through Congress, a passenger's bill of rights or some provisions related to a passenger's bill of rights were part of that bill. You were actually discouraged at that time by some lawmakers from pushing to get that broken out into its own separate bill because they felt there was enough support for the Bill of Rights to actually carry FAA reauthorization through.
Yes.
Is it a tougher sell now than it was back then? I mean, why is there even an issue about whether it'll pass?
I don't know. The airlines don't want it. I mean, that would be the only issue. They don't want any form of regulation that would, what they call, hem them in or have them have to allow passengers off of planes within a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that our regulation is written, it still allows them to create their own plan and design their own amount of time based on safety. And it should be based on the safety of the passengers.
Right.
And there are some things that we can call into play in terms of the UN Global World Health Organization stating that your chance of fatal blood clot doubles after 4 hours in the same position.
Mm-hmm.
There are some guidelines that I think could be used from a health and safety standpoint in determining these things, but so far that what is safe and isn't safe hasn't been determined, so we don't know how the Department of Transportation would rule on those minimum standards. That said, we still favor this legislation. It's better than not having legislation
right.
in place. And we don't understand why the airlines would fight it, to be honest.
Well, Kate, we have better than a month to go before Labor Day and the end of the traditional summer travel season. Is there anything you could tell our listeners to do as a precaution ahead of time to avoid being in a situation where they're stranded on the tarmac? Is it unique to particular airlines or particular routes or parts of the country or what?
There are some airlines that violate more than others. You know, Delta Airlines tends to strand a lot more people and have a lot more congestion than, say, Southwest,
mm-hmm.
Who hardly ever does it. U.S. Airways tends to violate a lot. American Airlines tends to violate a lot. United Airlines has some pretty egregious strandings, but not a whole lot of them, you know, not in bulk
right.
like we've seen the others. And they do tend to happen more in that Midwest and Eastern corridor than they do on the West Coast. But that being said, our flights that were diverted in Austin had nothing to do with the East Coast.
Right.
You know, or anything to do with weather out there. And so that's why we feel it's so imperative that there be some minimum standards in place.
Well, Kate, before we go, and we have to go, I want to ask you about the reaction you got to something in your recent press release, because I know it was very funny. You had a press release regarding the open letter that was sent to the public, signed by 12 airline CEOs recently, asking the public to support a call for a congressional curb on oil speculation. And you said, at every step, our volunteers are met by armies of paid airline lobbyists and lawyers arguing that providing decent treatment for passengers would interfere with the operation of the free market. Now, when that same free market pinches the airlines, they're the first ones to run to the government for help. How did this press release go over?
As soon as the press release went out, I received an email from the Air Transport Association, from Basil Barimo, saying, and David Castlevetter, their spokesperson, had forwarded our press release to him.
Uh-huh.
And Basil said, if you keep this up, we're going to tell Congress to drill for oil in the exclusive areas of the Napa Valley, which is where I live.
Well,
and I'm thinking, doesn't that make our case?
That almost sounds like it had to be a joke.
It may have been, but the way that they attacked me in the press.
The fact that you have to wonder if it is a joke says it all. Right.
Right. That's right.
All right, Kate. Well, listen, take care, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul.
And the website for the group is www.flyersrights.org. My guest has been Kate Hanai, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero, that's aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.